Come join Makeshift Stories at Pod Summit on June 22nd. Details at the end of this episode.
Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
This month's story, 164, Free Energy, read by Mitchell Two. Somewhere and sometime, what appears to be fiction may end up being fact. I had found his video channel almost by chance. An oblique reference in an email from the tax evader to the Department of Revenue had been the clue. It was a cold case, the details of which had been released to me on the off chance I could find the offender after more than a decade. The acronym FEC was in mouse type in the footer of the message. He had probably sent the email from the wrong account. An oversight, I guessed. But then, oversights were the goods and trade of my business. I had ignored it, until the more obvious trails and tips led nowhere. Then, with nothing else to go on, I researched what FEC might mean, following up each result until I hit on the Free Energy Coalition, a fringe group which claimed the laws of thermodynamics were lies. I pulled the picture of the suspect up on the screen and compared it to the intense-looking man in the video. The similarity wasn't all that apparent, and the guy in the video, clearly a decade older than the photo, was thinner, eyes a different shade of gray, no glasses. It was conceivable he was wearing tinted contact lenses, and, if he was my target, he was like a camouflaged octopus hiding in plain sight on the ocean bottom. You wouldn't notice its true nature until it had its tentacles around you. I pressed play on his latest video and settled in to watch. Leaning slightly into the camera, he somehow commanded my attention. I was immediately fascinated. Something special was coming through on the video, something which made you want to trust him. That went partway to explaining his surprisingly large audience. He slowly smiled, taking his time, like he didn't care if he was losing audience numbers. Then he spoke, in a measured, confident tone.
I want to take a different angle on perpetual motion machines today, which, as we have talked about before, supposedly defy the first and second laws of thermodynamics. If you remember, these laws were, in quotes, discovered as steam engines began to be developed. The work of Nicolas Lenard Sadi Carnot in the 1820s was particularly interesting. He was going to help France win the Napoleonic Wars with incredibly efficient machines. Machines more efficient than anything we've invented to date. And that is when they started to shut things down. It was kind of like the early days of the internet, before the world's powerful realized what a huge threat the net was to their continued control and began to break it apart. Similarly, by 1850, people like the physicist Lord Kelvin were secretly paid to formulate the math, and James Watt, the mechanics, to disprove the existence of perpetual motion. They succeeded in directing science and engineering away from pursuing free energy. Then, by the end of the 1850s, the first thermodynamic textbook by William Rankine, which described the first and second laws of thermodynamics, was released. After that, physicists like Maxwell, Boltzmann, and Planck dug an even deeper intellectual hole, one so deep that we've never been able to climb out. Meanwhile, the powerful and rich grew even wealthier and more powerful as the world industrialized, using energy from coal, which they controlled and sold. Meanwhile, oblivious to the obvious, humanity has been riding around the sun on a massive perpetual motion machine, which every day makes a mockery of the fake laws of thermodynamics. Yes, I'm talking about the solar system itself, spinning on forever and ever. I paused the video and fell back into my chair, clutching my now tepid tea, thinking about the Earth spinning around the sun since before humanity existed. Hey, Ellery, wake up. That's not what you're being paid to do, I reminded myself. I am a freelance bounty hunter specializing in tax evasion, cold cases. And Jerry Maxland, apparently in some circles a well-known online personality, if he was whom I suspected, was my current case. He fit the profile, so it was surprising that he was so public. Jerry had simply appeared from nowhere about 12 years ago. There was no trace of him I could find before then. No social media history, no paper records, no credit rating, no driver's license, nothing, which generally indicated a fake identity. There was a 2-year gap between the disappearance of Ethan Alexandre, a serial con artist, author of several Ponzi schemes, and a man with a huge unpaid tax bill, and Jerry Maxland. But looking vaguely like another person wasn't enough. I needed evidence tying the two men together. I needed a linchpin. I put my tea down and scanned to the end of Maxland's video, then clicked on play. Thanks for watching, and don't forget to show your support by coming out to the Free Energy World Summit next month. You'll find links to the registration form in the show notes below. Energy wants to be free. Free energy! He chanted, then the video ended, and the next one in the queue started to download. I closed the window and knew what I had to do. In another browser tab, I began to search for cheap flights. The event was in an older hotel and conference complex, located so far off the main strip that the owners had given up the pretense of being somewhere tropical, letting the desert reclaim the land, probably saving truckloads of money. As I walked past the dead palm trees sprouting up through the emerald green artificial grass, the remote location and mostly empty parking lot led me to believe the crowd would be small, making it hard to blend in, especially if they all knew each other, which was frequently the case with fringe groups. But when I pulled the aging aluminum and glass doors open, I found myself in a surprisingly large conference space. The heat of human presence and the aroma of a non-air-conned interior escaped past me into a marginally cooler mid-morning as I forced my way upstream against the momentary gust. The keynote was still a half hour away, but the place was already packed by what I guessed to be a crowd of 2,500 or more. I was blown away. Did all these people believe in Jerry Maxland? Did they believe in his outrageous claims? I slipped into the back of the packed hall. It was standing room only, so my anxiety about being anonymous quickly subsided. The crowd began to chant, "Free energy! Free energy!" which I realized was both a demand and a statement of belief. The banner on the massive video projection behind the podium read, "The Scientific Conspiracy." Then the PA system started to blast out, "We are the champions." The crowd became agitated and began to sing along. I could almost feel Freddie Mercury spinning in his grave. The song changed to, "We Will Rock You." I was convinced the stomping feet would set up a resonance frequency and would bring the flimsy conference hall roof down on everyone. The audience was being intentionally whipped up. The intensity was more like a World Cup final than a meetup, and it began to frighten me. Why had I come? My lizard brain questioned getting my flight response ready. But I knew why I was there and squashed the impulse down. If Jerry was indeed my target, he had swindled $200 million from people whose common sense had been corrupted by his false promises of wealth. Reading their stories had been painful. No one deserved what this guy had done to them, and if I was right, he was at it again. On my way to the conference, I had researched the finances of the Free Energy Coalition. It had no substantial income and survived on small donations. If donations were Jerry's scheme, it was either not working or he hadn't ramped up the ask yet. My other thought was the organization was a shell to somehow launder the money from his investment scams, but there was no obvious evidence of money laundering, which didn't mean it wasn't happening. I just needed to figure out how. The first evidence of Maxland's existence was a bank account opened about 12 years ago with $500. This was 2 years after Ethan Alexandre disappeared with his investors' savings. The timing was right, but it was hard believing a man with a propensity for expensive houses, cars, and yachts would be able to suppress his addiction to money for more than a decade. Jerry Maxlin's thrift shop lifestyle would have been torture for Alexandre. On the surface, the two were so opposite, and that was what had fueled my suspicions. Ethan was smart enough to know he'd need to change all his habits. But it was those habits, those propensities, which would eventually leak out and would get him caught. While I couldn't smell where the money was yet, Ethan's ego wouldn't allow him to be nobody forever, and possibly Jerry was his slide back into his old addictions. I am very patient, and I can wait. The commission on a large recovery like this case would let me indulge in my modest needs for years. The last chord of the song blasted out, and its reverb had barely decayed when the crowd began to chant, dragging my thoughts back to the present. Jerry! 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 People around me started clapping and yelling. We don't buy the conspiracy! We don't buy into the lies! Free energy! I found myself standing on tiptoes to see. A spotlight was flailing around the stage, then spun out into the audience, where a human bow wave was pushing through the crowd. The spotlight finally found him. He was shaking, offered hands, and people were patting on his back, congratulating him as he made his way to the stage, like a rock star who had unexpectedly appeared amongst his hardcore fans. The crowd propelled him forward until he mounted the stairs, turned at the top, and waved. The audience reacted instantly, cheering until my hearing began to distort. Someone came on stage and handed Jerry a wireless mic.
Free energy! Expose the conspiracy!
Jerry yelled, then waved, turning to take in the room and bask in the applause. Impossibly, the crowd noise ramped up. Jerry took in their energy for a moment, then motioned for quiet. The room slowly came back to an ambient but expectant state, and Jerry began to pace in front of the huge projection screen now bearing his name in massive white sans-serif letters.
Thank you. Thank you. This is all about you. It's great to see you here. You are the proof we are not some weirdo fringe group. We are real, and we are a movement.
He paused to let the crowd respond, then continued.
We will not stop until we have exposed the 500-year scientific conspiracy and have freed energy.
The crowd exploded into chants and applause. Like a conductor of an orchestra, Maxlin managed the willing crowd, bringing it to a crescendo when he wanted a response and toning it down to a murmur when he wanted to speak. I was impressed. It was a skill I suspected Ethan Alexandre would have cultivated, and it made me more convinced that Jerry and Ethan were one in the same.
I'm going to talk today about two pivotal points in recent history. Not so long ago, a brilliant lone inventor challenged scientific doctrine, challenged the corporate and political powers of his day, and almost succeeded in giving the world free energy. Then, 70 years later, another tried to defy the auto and oil industries with an earth-shattering invention. For a brief moment, he too almost toppled our overlords from their mighty towers.
A slide of Tesla's Wardenclyffe Tower loomed up on the screen behind Maxlund.
I'm talking about Nikola Tesla and Stanley Myers. Geniuses both, people whose mind were unfettered by the handcuffs of scientific dogma. Both knew the truth and suffered because of it, both victims of the conspiracy. We honor them here today. We will restore their reputations and their work. Tesla wanted to transform the world by making energy available anywhere at no cost. Free energy! Free energy! The crowd spontaneously chanted.
Maxlund waited for them to calm down.
and his wireless energy transmission worked. But his inventions were dismissed, discredited, and buried by the likes of J.P. Morgan and Edison. Hidden away because they would have fundamentally destroyed the business interests of the status quo. In 1900, Tesla came up with the theory of perpetual motion based on the principles of magnetism. Combined with his wireless transmission system, well, the rest is history, as the saying goes. Some of the audience began jeering as Max Lind explained how much of Tesla's research had been intentionally lost, and what remained at his death altered by governments and corporations, intent on discrediting the inventor. His speech wasn't what I had been expecting. It was filled with historical references, truth filtered through the lens of conspiracy-fueled fantasy, to come to questionable conclusions. Despite the obvious problems with his arguments, I found myself getting sucked into his world, beginning to agree with him that at historical pivots, the entrenched fought to protect their interests. He rode the razor-thin edge of plausibility, and I came to understand how Max Lind could have filled a large hall with believers, and understand how Ethan Alexandre could convince so many normally rational people to invest in such thinly disguised scams. But this wasn't the first time last century a brilliant mind was shut down when they discovered the truth. Max Lind continued. The image on the screen behind him switched from a picture of Tesla to a diagram from a patent application and a headline clipped from a yellowed newspaper. Brother of discredited inventor claims his sibling was murdered. In the late 1980s, Max Lind shouted over the crowd, who immediately began to calm down so they could hear him. Stanley Myers invented what he called the water fuel cell, which the inventor used to power a dune buggy. He had this actually working. Can you believe that? There's news footage of this. His system was, and is, elegant. It splits ordinary tap water into hydrogen and oxygen with far less energy than an electrolytic cell, then combusts the hydrogen in an ordinary internal combustion engine, creating water again. Perpetual motion. The oil companies and governments claimed it was a hoax, that his process broke the first and second laws of thermodynamics. And what do we know about these laws? He encouraged the audience, pushing his microphone out for them to respond. Lies! The audience roared back in unison. You're right. We've been lied to. Energy is free. But they don't want that known. It would end the economic enslavement of the world's population, Max Lind belted out with the practiced ease of a preacher. Tesla and people like Myers were individuals who challenged the system, and they almost won. But we are a movement. We will not be ignored. We cannot be stopped. We will expose the truth and free energy. Free energy! Free energy! The audience excitedly echoed his last words. I found myself swept up in the moment, yelling with them, forgetting why I had come. The crowd pressed in around me, making me feel suddenly claustrophobic and vulnerable. I needed to desperately get out and pushed my way to the back of the hall, slipping out into the heat of a cloudless desert midday, where I discovered I was shivering, not from the AC, but from the threat of a crowd on the edge of becoming a mob. I needed some time to reflect, so I made my way across the heat-softened asphalt of the parking lot to a Chickenwich Inn that looked like it had just sprouted out of the hard pack like a mushroom after a heavy rain. I ordered, then dropped myself into a booth by the parking lot window, still shivering despite the sweaty walk, and stared at my chicken sandwich, reflecting on the fact I had, for a moment, believed Max Lind. To center myself, I pulled out my tablet, checked my notes, then reread the impact statement from a 75-year-old woman
who had lost her retirement savings and was now living in a group home on welfare as a result of Ethan's scheme.
"Can I join you?"
someone asked, startling me. I looked up to see a large, middle-aged man with the beginning of a pear-shaped torso, wearing a Free Energy Summit conference lanyard which read, "Tom Landers, Organizing Committee." There was no one else in the restaurant. He could have sat anywhere, and I had taken my lanyard off.
"I didn't mean to startle you. I noticed you at the conference, and haven't seen you at any of the other free energy events. It's a pretty tight-knit community," he said, sitting down across from me before I could say no. "Are you press?" he inquired.
"No, it's my first time. I stumbled across one of Jerry's videos online." Which was partly true. I always found it was easier to cover your real intentions if you included some facts.
"Yeah, Jerry's really good, very convincing. We're always looking for new members. After all, that's how the truth will eventually come out, right? Eventually, there'll be too many of us to ignore. Miss..."
"Pleased to meet you," I made a point of looking at his lanyard. "Tom, have you been working with Free Energy for a long time?" Suspecting he had followed me to the restaurant, which wasn't a good sign, I decided to play along. Maybe there would be something I could use.
"Yeah, since the start,"
Tom boasted, making no effort to disguise his belief I was someone who shouldn't be there.
"I met Jerry at a psychokinesis conference about 12 years ago. Do you believe in the power of the mind, Miss...
Eileen, just call me Eileen. I've heard about the field, but I don't know much about it."
"It's worth looking into, Eileen. But right now, we're here for free energy, aren't we?"
"Absolutely. I'm fascinated by Jerry and his ideas."
"They are more than ideas, Miss Eileen. They're the truth. The truth that powerful people don't want known. Sometimes they even hire people to attend events like this one, to spy on us, and spread malicious information amongst our members."
He looked at me accusingly. "I'm just here to learn more. I'm blown away by the scale of the whole cover-up. It's massive."
"Money, Eileen. That's all it takes, and that's what it's all about. Money."
I wanted to tell Tom how right he was. It was the first honest statement I had heard in the last few hours. But instead, taking a bite out of my sandwich, I said, "I can't believe that we all bought in, hook, line, and sinker. How did Jerry first discover the scientific conspiracy?"
"Funny you should ask that, Eileen. Jerry is a very private guy. He doesn't talk much about his pre-free energy days. Just says he was lost in the lies like everyone else on the planet. Like most of us, he's a humble, hard-working person who finally got fed up."
"So, he was into psychokinesis before this?" I suggested. Tom took a sip of his Coke, folded his arms across a double extra-large t-shirt sporting the slogan, "The Real Truth," above a picture of Tesla. He leaned back in his chair, assessing me. It was then I realized just how big the man was. I unconsciously froze in my chair, like a rabbit, hoping if I didn't move, I would become invisible.
"I don't get you, lady,"
he finally said, shaking his oversized head.
"The past is the past. This is now. It doesn't matter what Jerry did before free energy. Maybe he worked at a place like this, washing dishes or frying chicken burgers. Who knows and who cares? It's only about what he's doing now. Wanting to dig into his past, well, that makes me wonder why you're here."
"Oh, sorry. Don't get me wrong. It's just a habit. My safe zone. I'm into genealogy, family histories, and that kind of stuff. It's where I automatically go when, well, when I meet someone new and interesting." I smiled, hoping Tom would be caught off guard. "I'm really impressed with Jerry, and am a huge fan. He and the movement make me feel like we've got a chance, you know? That the future won't be a dystopian nightmare." Tom seemed to relax, although I wasn't sure the big man was completely convinced. "Hey, I know this is a huge favor, but I'd really like to meet Jerry. I've got a bit of money I inherited from an aunt, and I wanted to do some good with it. Aunt Janet was a staunch supporter of alternate power sources. I know she would have been behind free energy.
And if I could arrange that,
Tom, suddenly eager, offered,
would you be, interested in going for coffee after?
Sure, I agreed, already constructing the excuse I'd used to get out of it. We agreed to meet after the conference in the lobby bar of the hotel, which the convention center was grafted to like a field of barnacles on the bottom of a sleek but dated racing yacht, which was never going to leave the docks again. I had nothing on Jerry Maxland, other than a hunch, but sensed from my unwelcomed meeting with Tom in the Chicken Witch, these guys were paranoid, serious, and had something to hide. It wasn't a good combination at the best of times, and with $200 million at stake, this qualified as potentially one of the more dangerous things I had ever agreed to. The meeting was in a public place, which offered some measure of safety. Although as I approached the bar, through the dense cigarette-fogged, floral-scented air of the casino, I felt more anxious than I could remember. I spotted Maxland alone at a table, noting that Tom and a few other men from his inner circle were seated nearby. I pushed my anxiety back into its box, stiffened my resolve by thinking about the victims, and strode casually up to Jerry Maxland, extending my arm. Maxland rose and shook the offered hand.
Great to meet you, Miss...
Eileen.
Okay, Eileen. I hear that you are a new convert and are interested in supporting us financially. Please, sit down.
Yeah, my aunt recently passed away and left me some money. I want to honor her somehow, maybe through a donation. As I mentioned to your, friend, Tom, over there, she was a supporter of alternative energy. If she had known about the movement, I'm sure she would have been a member.
And you, Eileen?
Maxlin inquired, glancing over my shoulder to the table where Tom and the rest of his entourage were sitting.
What about you? Are you a believer? It's an important question, which needs to be answered before I'm willing to continue. My detractors are everywhere. I'm under constant surveillance. I can tell you think I'm paranoid. Most people do, Maxlin noted. I'm not, but I can never be too careful. They don't want the truth to get out, Eileen. They'd do anything to discredit me, connect me to some kind of scandal or something illegal. So, I need to be very careful. Their agents come in many disguises. For example, you could be one.
He smiled, then took a drink from a glass of water. I can assure you, I'm not a government agent or a corporate spy, Mr. Maxland. I'm just a nobody clerk at an insurance company who thinks your ideas are amazing. I want to help you get the word out and honor my aunt at the same time. Here, let me at least buy you a drink to start.
My offer was calculated. Ethan Alexandre didn't drink alcohol. Water's fine for me, he replied. But feel free to order something for yourself. In the meantime, maybe you can tell me about your tipping point.
Tipping point?
Yes, Eileen. The point where you began to suspect we're being fed a bunch of lies. Everyone has one. Sometimes I use them in my videos or posts. Not your name, of course, just the story. I collect them. They're great for recruiting. So, what's yours?
I studied Maxland. I needed him to react. So I decided to create a story from one of the victim impact statements. If he was Ethan, he'd recognize it and hopefully give himself away. I think it began about 14 years ago. I was working with a group of seniors who had lost all their savings in an investment scam. They were being thrown out of their retirement community onto the street because they had no money left. But they all had life insurance policies with us and wanted to cash them in. I found out later they'd been conned into investing in a Ponzi scheme. Over $200 million was ripped off from people like them. I watched Maxland carefully as I spoke, looking for a sign of recognition. He was unconsciously stroking the side of his water glass with a finger. Had he been doing that before? They told me some slick investment manager came to talk at their community center. A very convincing man, I was told. Like you. But that's not my actual tipping point, only part of it. Around the same time, I saw a documentary on gold about how the actual ingots have gone missing. Did you know that there's none left in Fort Knox? For the first time, I began to realize money was just a construct we all agreed to. It has no real value, and if that was so, other things could be made up too. The truth, Mr. Maxland, I lost faith in what I had assumed was the truth. So I look beyond the surface now, and dig down to see what's really hiding there. It's amazing how the surface of something can be so misleading.
I'm not a scam artist, if that's what you are inferring. Maxland had stopped stroking his glass and leaned forward. I don't like accusations being leveled at me, Miss... Well, I guess you don't want us to know your real name. Are you just a surface hiding something, Eileen?
He caught Tom's eye, and the big man was suddenly looming behind me.
I'm here to potentially donate money, not discredit you, I explained, trying not to show how nervous I had become.
Unlike you, I am who I say I am, Eileen. I'm sure you've already checked my background, and I look like I just appeared out of thin air. And that is not far from the truth. I didn't come here because I had a choice in the matter. There are many more things we are not being told, Eileen. Many, many more. You look like a smart person, so I'll assume you've heard of the multiverse. I'm telling you this because few will believe you. I can assure you the multiverse is very real and frequently very porous. Things, people, events, and even the laws of nature, at times, leak from one parallel reality to another, so the physics of any particular space and time can suddenly change the physical reality of another. I know this sounds beyond the farthest imaginable reaches of credibility. Just think about it, and for a minute, accept it as fact. Now consider. Should a person be responsible for their doppelganger's actions in another branch of reality? If a version of you committed a heinous crime in a parallel world and you found yourself there at some point, should you be punished for the crime? Is that fair, Eileen? Are you even the same person?
Maxland suddenly got up, startling me.
I think it's time for you to leave now, Eileen, if that is really your name. We couldn't find anyone with your description online, except for some partial matches on a business social media site. One almost fits. She works in the insurance industry, sort of a freelance investigator, but I'm sure it's not you. Maybe she's just a doppelganger from another place and time. So maybe we have something in common after all. Goodbye, whatever your name is.
He nodded to Tom.
Please see our guest safely out.
I had put Ethan Alexandre's file aside for a while. After the free energy conference, it felt like I was at a dead end. I had no new ideas and needed some distance. Maxlin's weird comment about doppelgangers from a different dimension at first seemed laughable, but he had somehow managed to get me wondering. He had no proof, but neither did I. It was a testament to his persuasive nature that it took me almost 3 weeks to clear my mind. Finally, feeling objective again, I flipped on my laptop and opened a browser. I wanted to watch Maxland's videos one more time, then decide whether to move on or pursue the case from another angle. I still had the free energy channel bookmarked, and once the page rendered, I saw there was a new post from a couple of days after I had met him at the hotel. He was seated in what appeared to be a dated basement rec room, with fake mahogany wall paneling and bookshelves overflowing with the discards of several lives. A free energy banner had been pinned to the wood panels behind him. What struck me was the subtle change in his presence. For an instant, he looked somehow smaller, less confident, more like prey than the predator he was.
However, it was only for a fraction of a second. Perhaps he had been distracted by something off camera just before the recording started. Whatever it was, the crack in his armor sealed up, and he was back.
Free energy! That is both our demand and our mission, he proclaimed. I've never suggested this would come easy. Our opponents won't passively lie down and let us walk over them. They will lie, mislead, and fight back. They will do everything they can to stop the rising waters of our movement. Nevertheless, like a high tide, we will eventually overwhelm the sea walls of lies they have erected to protect themselves. We must be patient, and like breakers pounding an unstable shoreline, be content to slowly erode the opposition until it falls into the water and is swept away in the tide.
He paused as if waiting for the full effect of his words to sink in, then leaned closer to the camera.
We have a win, he announced triumphantly. A breakthrough.
He held up a stack of yellowing handwritten pages.
These are the lost notes from Tesla's experiments in perpetual motion and magnetism. They were given to me to protect. Their simple possession paints me as the primary target for the conspiracy and places those around me at risk. Recently, there was a close call, which forced me to consider the best way forward.
He took a deep breath.
I've thought long and hard about this, and came to a difficult decision. Our movement is strong and growing every day. It is greater than the fate of a single person. The FEC and this forbidden knowledge must survive. So, in order to protect both, I have decided to return to the place of my former life, a place the powerful forces aligned against us in this world cannot go. Continue to erode the lies, and I will return when they are ready to topple.
Maxlin sat for a moment, then reached forward and shut the camera off. I wasn't exactly sure what he meant by no one would be able to follow him to his former home. However, something told me Terry Maxlin, or whatever his name was, had been speaking the truth, for once. I hesitated for a second, considering, then moved the case files to the inactive folder.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. Want digital banking that works for you? Sign up for an ATB, no-fee, all-in account. By doing most of your banking digitally, you'll avoid paper fees, monthly fees, and get unlimited digital transactions. It's 24/7 banking at its finest. To find out more, head over to atb.com. The Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB, is proud to be a sponsor of this year's Pod Summit, Western Canada's premier podcast conference. Join us and other members of the Alberta Podcast Network on June 22nd at Fort Calgary for a day of learning and connection making. The theme of this year's conference is After the Start. Here's what you'll learn: how to make your podcast stand out of the crowd, how to breathe new life into your show if you've been podcasting for a while, how to connect with your listeners and build a community that supports you, marketing tips and tricks to grow your show from hundreds to thousands of downloads, how to build different income streams with your podcast. Tickets are just $150. You can get $25 off by using the promo code ILOVEPODCASTING. That's ILOVEPODCASTING, all lowercase, no spaces. Get your ticket today at podsummit.com. To listen to other great APN podcasts, such as Not There Yet, please head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. Makeshift Stories Somewhere Sometime is released once a month between the 15th and the 20th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu.
Opening and closing music was composed and recorded by David Hume. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. You can help us out by telling your friends about us and getting them to head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.